Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the News Gazette for Monday, March 24th, 2025. I'm going to start, of course, with the big news from the weekend, which is the NCAA tournament. And I will move then to more local, national, and state news and obituaries in the second half. So, of course, the top story of today is the Illini's return to the Sweet 16, which was denied last night. And we have a headline to that effect, and it reads, "Feeling Blue, Illini's Bid to Return to Sweet 16 Denied." And this is by Matt Daniels of the News Gazette. The message Brad Underwood delivered to his Illinois men's basketball team at halftime on Sunday evening, "Get back to themselves." Message nearly received, but not enough. The sixth-seeded Illini lost in the second round of the NCAA tournament for the third time this decade after third-seeded Kentucky kept the Illini at bay en route to an 84-75 win amid a sellout crowd at FISCERV Forum. No trip to Indianapolis later next week for Illinois. No Sweet 16 appearance by the Illini for the second straight season after the Wildcats improved to 5-0 against the Illini in NCAA tournament games. Underwood cited his team's slow start in both halves and turnover troubles. "Our guys fought, our guys competed, our guys played hard," Underwood said. "We couldn't get a stop, and the turnovers were the difference." Instead of the orange and blue Illini faithful descending upon Lucas Oil Stadium in downtown Indy, Big Blue Nation will show up for the Midwest Region semifinals on Friday night as the Wildcats will play fellow SEC member and second-seeded Tennessee, mainly because Kentucky controlled Sunday's game, leading for all but 26 seconds against the Illini. A 12-foot jumper by Kylan Boswell right in front of the Illini bench with 1:36 remaining cut the Kentucky lead to 74-68 and capped a 10-2 run by Illinois. "Today was tough. All we can do is enjoy the time we had together," Boswell said. But Illinois could not get closer the rest of the way despite superb offensive performances by Boswell and Tomislav Ivisic. Boswell dropped in a team-high 23 points to go along with 6 assists, while Ivisic scored 19 points on the strength of 5 three-pointers. Kasparis Jakukonis scored 13 points but committed 6 of the Illini's 14 turnovers. Kentucky used those turnovers to its advantage, outscoring the Illini 26-8 in points off turnovers. "They were making stuff uncomfortable for us," Boswell said. "We can't turn the ball over that much." Kentucky used the strong start to the second half to quickly increase its 37-32 halftime lead to 45-32 with 17:32 left in the second half following a coast-to-coast layup by Otega Owe. Then the efficient shooting Kobe Brea helped Kentucky stem any potential run by Illinois. The Wildcats guard scored a team-high 23 points on 10 of 16 shooting, including 10 straight points as Kentucky upped its advantage from 60 to 51 with 11:50 remaining to 70-54 with 9:32 left after another jumper by Brea. Owe, Lamont Butler, and Amari Williams also contributed for Kentucky. Illinois only led at one juncture of the game when Boswell finished off a dunk with 16:42 left in the first half to put Illini ahead 5-4. Other than that, Kentucky controlled the scoreboard using a 9-0 run after Boswell's dunk and then a 12-3 spurt to go ahead 25-13 with 8:34 left in the first half after a layup by Noah Trent. Forcing Illinois into 8 first-half turnovers helped the Wildcats gain a double-digit lead just past the midway point of the first half. But forcing Kentucky into several miscues of its own allowed the Illini to make up the deficit and go into halftime only down 5 points. Boswell and Ivisic kept the Illini close before halftime, with Boswell supplying 10 first-half points on a variety of drives to the basket and Ivisic knocking down a pair of three-pointers en route to 8 first-half points. Ivicic said, "It was a great experience. I really liked it here. Even though we didn't finish the season the way we wanted to, it was a great experience." Moving on, in more basketball, we turn to the women, and a column here by Jim Rossow with the headline, "That Illinois team is pretty unbelievable." And this is that's a quote from former Illinois women's basketball coach Teresa Grentz, the all-time winningest coach in program history, and she was on hand to watch a game at State Farm Center. This is a photo of her, actually, in January 2024. On Saturday night, Illinois women's basketball won its first NCAA tournament game in 25 years. On Sunday morning, the Hall of Fame coach who led the Illini to that win in 2000 phoned the News Gazette to say how pleased she was with the current group's success. "That Illinois team is pretty unbelievable," Teresa Grentz said from her home office in Westchester, Pennsylvania, where she was getting ready to walk my 11-month-old Golden Retriever. The Illini beat Creighton 66-57 in Austin, Texas, and next play top seed and host Texas at 1 p.m. Monday, that's tonight. It was their first NCAA tournament win since Grentz's Illini beat Utah in the first round in 2000. "What Green does and how she does it is tremendous," Grentz told sports editor Matt Daniels. "Absolutely tremendous. Illinois is so lucky to have her. She's great." Grentz is the program's all-time leader in wins. She and Green are the only women's basketball coaches with winning records at the U of I. The Illini, hampered by injuries all season, have been winning despite a six-player rotation. "Those kids never stop fighting," Grentz said. "It's not like, okay, poor us, why did this happen to us? They did it. Buy your season tickets and sell it out next season." I'm going to move on to some local news, and we'll circle back to women's basketball a little bit later. We have a headline here on the front page with a 15-year-old in critical condition after shooting incident in Danville, and this is by Jim Rossow. A suspect is in custody in connection to a Saturday afternoon shooting that left a 15-year-old in critical condition. At 2 p.m., police responded to a shooting in the 1200 block of East William Street and found the 15-year-old in the roadway with more than one gunshot wound. An investigation led Danville police to a suspect who was apprehended in a field southeast of Poolside Drive around 4 p.m. The suspect ran from the officers and was arrested after a foot pursuit. The Vermilion County Sheriff's Department assisted Danville police with the arrest. And the investigation is continuing, and if anyone has information about the incident, please contact the Danville Police Department at 217-431-2250 or contact Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at vccrimestoppers.org. Actually, we are going to go back to sports here for a second. We have a NCAA Division II sports news with the headline, "Parkland ends historic season as national runner-up. This group has been special," and this has been the stories by Zach Pyatt. This time 3 years ago, John Bowler didn't have a school to call home. He had just been let go as an assistant basketball coach by the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, where he spent three seasons for his first Division I coaching opportunity. Following his tenure there, Bowler searched for his next step for quite some time. Eventually, Parkland College came calling, and he hasn't looked back since. "Being able to be here is a blessing," Bowler said late Saturday night. "Getting to where we're at now is a testament to when you do the right things, God puts you in the right place at the right times with the right people around you. Credit to all these guys. They bought into what I was selling. Going from where we were 3 years ago, which is one of the lowest lows of my life, to a pretty high high, there's a lot to be grateful for and a lot to be thankful for what God has given me." That was Bowler's message after Saturday night's NJCAA Division II National Championship. All positives. Even with his Cobras falling just short of bringing home their first national title since 1986, losing 55-54 to Kirkwood, Iowa, at Mary Miller Gym in the Danville Area Community College campus. And how could he not focus on all the good? There was a lot of it this season. The Cobras finished as the national runner-up with a record of 33-3, the most single-season wins in school history. They won their second consecutive Midwest Athletic Conference title and Region 24 title, which propelled them into making their first run to the national championship game in nearly 4 decades. This group has been special, Bowler said. It's what we've built for 3 years, starting from my first year here. Getting to this point means a lot, and it's a standard now. We've set a standard. Kirkwood staved off a second-half comeback attempt by Parkland to earn the win on Saturday night. Parkland trailed 54-52 with less than a minute to play before Jamonte Williams tied the game at 54. On a layup with 29 seconds left, Kirkwood didn't let Parkland get the ball back until 1.2 seconds remained after Trajan Sane drove to the basket and was fouled by Williams. He made first three free throw to give Kirkwood the lead, but missed the second one, and the Cobras called a timeout to set up a last-second look at a potential game-winning basket. But a turnaround three-point attempt by Williams from the left wing in front of Parkland's bench was blocked, allowing Kirkwood to escape with the national title. Bowler gives all the credit to his players to even be in the position they were in on Saturday night. At the junior college level, there is constant roster turnover, and it's ramped up even more so in the last few years during the transfer portal era that litters the NCAA landscape. Good JUCO programs are used as a stepping stone to the next destination, but Parkland has found a way to create a family feeling. They want to play together, and they want to be part of it. They dedicated themselves to each other and the process, Bowler said. We had a team that was really bonded and connected. Our culture was set last year, and we built it into this one. We talk about the we and the me being the same. The best interest of the team is always the best interest of the person, and that's what separates us at times. Immediately following Saturday's loss, nearly every Parkland player was in tears, and at least one was hugging another for the entire award ceremony. Nobody was thinking about the next step. The only thing on anyone's mind was the fact that this season with this team was over. It's unbelievable. I feel like it hasn't really sunk in, Parkland sophomore Chandler Jackson said. My mom called me the other night and was like, "You're in the Final Four." It doesn't even feel real at this point. It's amazing, and I just love this team. I love this group of guys. Williams, a Champaign native, paced the Cobras in the championship game with 17 points and 9 rebounds. Drew Lewis Jr. scored 14 points, and Jackson added another 8 points. Williams, Lewis, and Jaden Martin each made the all-tournament team. Champaign deserves better, Parkland freshman Adam Squire said. They deserve more championships, so it feels great to give them that opportunity. It wasn't the outcome the Cobras wanted, but the entire week reminded them that there's more to the journey than the end result. They won their first 3 games of the tournament, with the highlight coming in their 95-74 semifinal win against then-undefeated Pima Community College. Throughout the entire tournament, the community members filled Mary Miller Gym to cheer on the Cobras, who play their home games just a 40-minute drive away. They practically had home court advantage all week long, and there wasn't an empty seat on Saturday night. Everywhere you go, the people are the most important thing, and that shows what Parkland is, Bowler said. We're going to get over the hump again. We will, and it's because of the people there. The community support, the kids, parents, former players, administrators, people who aren't even necessarily basketball fans, they were here to support us as a school. It means the most to me and the guys, and it shows what makes Parkland so special. I'm going to move on here to some columns. We have Brett Kepley, The Law, Q&A, and this is focused on the unique mixture of flavors in state's box of new laws. Again, this is by Brett Kepley, who is a lawyer with Land of Lincoln Legal Aid. Like Forrest Gump's box of chocolates today, we have several new flavors in a box of laws passed by the Illinois legislature. It's an assortment involving child support maintenance. parking rights for disabled condominium owners, and getting pay stubs from employers. These all went into effect January 1st. First, in divorce law, voluntary unemployment cannot be used by Daddy Deadbeat to argue he should not have an order of child support or maintenance entered or enforced against him. So if Daddy Deadbeat isn't paying child support because he says he's unemployed and is not looking for work, maybe he's living off his mom, the judge cannot now consider that defense in deciding if Mr. Deadbeat willfully violated the judge's original order to pay. However, being imprisoned generally is not considered to be a voluntary unemployment. The suspension of support slash maintenance is only during the actual days of imprisonment. It also used to be that a party ordered to pay alimony to their ex, in Illinois alimony is called maintenance, could have those payments suspended while the party was imprisoned for violating the court order of maintenance. That is now gone. So if a party was failing to make the payments originally ordered and was ultimately jailed for that failure, that deadbeat can't use the excuse of falling further behind because they are in the pokey. Nevertheless, the fact Daddy Deadbeat is in jail for some reason other than violating the payment order can still be a defense for failure to make the required payments during the period of confinement. Now, condo associations must develop policies. Oh, this is, we're moving now here to condominium law. Now, condo associations must develop policies to accommodate unit owners with disabilities to have access to parking. The policy is made through requests submitted by unit owners with disabilities, and the association board or managers must respond within 45 days of the request. This law applies to all condominiums that have parking, regardless of whether that's individual spaces, limited common elements or parking rights. And in all new construction by condo developers, such accessible parking must be part of the common elements. However, a disabled person can buy a parking unit or a residential unit that is part of common element parking spaces, and no developer or declarant may refuse to sell a parking unit to a disabled person or assign a limited common element parking space to a residential unit purchased by a disabled person. If a disabled person buys a parking or residential unit that was part of a limited common element parking spaces, they may request use of a common element accessible parking space in exchange for permitting the association to use their parking unit or limited common element parking space. This law also allows a person who thinks these new condo laws are being violated with regards to them to sue to get injunctions and money compensation. And finally, we have, looks like, employment pay stubs. Finally, in our inbox of new laws is another one for employers. Employers must now maintain copies of their employees' pay stubs for 3 years following date of payment. This obligation remains regardless if the employee is still employed. The stubs must be given to requesting employees and former employees up to 2 times in a 12-month period. Former employees can ask that the stubs be delivered either in paper or electronic form. The employer must turn over copy of the pay stubs within 21 calendar days of the request. Pay stub means an itemized statement or statements reflecting an employee's hours worked, rate of pay, and overtime hours worked, gross wages earned, deductions made from the employee's wages, and the total of wages and deductions year to date. An employer who furnishes electronic pay stubs in a manner that a former employee cannot access for at least a full year after separation must, upon an employee's leaving employment, offer to give them a record of all their pay stubs from the year preceding the date of separation. The offer must be made to the outgoing employee at or before the end of their final pay period, and an employer must also record in writing the date on which this offer was made to the outgoing employee and if and how they responded. Employers who violate these requirements can get fined up to $500 for each violation by the Illinois Department of Labor, in addition to monetary liabilities and other criminal fines for which the state agency can levy for other violations of the Illinois Wage Payment and Collection Act. This is a lot of different flavors of the law from the chocolate factory of Illinois General Assembly, but recipients of child support / maintenance, disabled condo owners, and employees might consider these nutritional chocolates instead, Mama always said. I'm going to move on to the It's Your Business column with by Yana Wiersema. Her headline today is Murder, Mayhem, and Movie Making in the Midwest. When independent filmmaker Vijay M. Rajan moved to the area about 3 years ago so that his wife could launch her own business, he didn't expect to do a lot of movie making in Champaign County. However, as he began to plan out Dark Soul River, a psychological thriller set in the Midwest, he learned that there were a lot of local resources to pull from, such as the recently launched Flyover Film Studios in Rantoul, where Rajan has been filming scenes over the past week. I love the entrepreneurial spirit in Champaign and Urbana, he said. We've been welcomed into so many places for locations. The Champaign Film Office helped us get so many things, deals on hotels, logistics, things like that. It was a very open community, really, to helping us get the resources we needed. Dark Soul River centers on two leads, Nathaniel Ambrose, the Kaw Valley Killer, and Sarathi, a Brahmin Hindu from India and the brother of one of Ambrose's victims. A week before his execution, Ambrose says he will share where more victims are buried, but only with Sarathi. It's a very dark and morbid story, but I think that there's a lot of hope and belief in good when it comes to the war of good versus evil, said Rajan, who's both writer and director of the film. As much as it's inspired by Silence of the Lambs, my ending is very much an inversion of Silence of the Lambs. The film is shot almost entirely in Champaign County, with the exception of some scenes filmed in Kickapoo State Park and along the Middle Fork Vermilion River as a stand-in for the Kansas River. Some familiar locales residents might recognize in the finished product include the Royer House and the Rantoul Recreation Center. Rajan added that he's very grateful to Flyover Film Studios, as he had previously planned to shoot the interrogation scenes, which make up a third of the film, in his own home. Being able to create custom sets on Flyover's sound stages, on the other hand, allows the crew to line up more creative shots and makes the movie, which has a budget of under $300,000, look like a million-dollar film, he said. More information about the movie and a link to donate can be found at filmmakerscollab.org/films/dark-soul-river. We have very, very high hopes for this film when it comes to distribution, Rajan said. And moving on, next we have Newman Watering Hole for sale. The corn crib of Newman, located at 107 East Yates Street, is for sale. Co-owner Erica Burris said that she and her husband Scott put the property on the market about 18 months ago. While the two of them have loved running the corn crib, she said that the current business climate for restaurants is challenging, particularly in smaller towns. Additionally, the couple has three kids to take care of, along with the farm and a hearing aid business Erica helps her mother with. I don't feel like we're able to give this business the care that it deserves and the energy it deserves, she said. It deserves to be great. When asked if she and her husband plan to keep the restaurant open until they find a buyer, Erica said she's trying to decide what to do next and will stick it out as long as she can. Her goal is to have a way forward by this summer, whether that's a new owner who will keep the building open as a restaurant or one who will convert it into something else. It's Erica's hope that whatever's next for the building, it will continue to benefit the local economy and be a special meeting place for the community. When this place is packed, like especially on a Friday night, and there are families here and there's people in the bar watching sports or enjoying happy hour, and then you have families on the other side in our restaurant, everybody talks, she said. Everybody goes to each other's table, and you hardly see people sitting. The current asking price for the property is a little under $300,000, and for more information, it's available at a listing from Keller Williams at homesearchil.com. We have a new vintage store aims to resist fast fashion. Resistance Threads, a new vintage clothing store at 405 South Neal Street in Champaign, will have a grand opening at noon on March 29th. My shop is more than just a store, wrote owner Emily Petak on social media. It's a place of expression, community, and conscious fashion. My goal is to help people shift from fast fashion to slow, intentional shopping while offering a range of pieces at different price points, from more affordable finds to rare, one-of-a-kind gems. Petak added that while she currently specializes in 1990s fashion, the shop's ever-changing inventory will feature a mix of true vintage and modern items. And now moving on, we have Urbana Retail Strip sold for over $3 million. Gateway Shops at Five Points, a 12-suite retail center on East University Avenue that includes Po' Boys, recently sold for $3.375 million, announced Marcus and Millichap. The film listed the property on behalf of Prairie Holdings Newton LLC and procured the buyer, Nicholas Chuge. Our client has invested in a portfolio of multi-tenant retail properties across the U.S., said David O'Keefe, First Vice President Investments at Marcus and Millichap. This deal was particularly attractive due to its 8.47% going-in cap rate, proximity to the University of Illinois, and a strong mix of e-commerce-resistant tenants. And that is the end of the business column. And moving on in the News Gazette's Living section here, we have a column, looks like by the Champaign County Museums Network, with the headline, Inside Out, Save Our Museums and Libraries. And this is by Monica M. Scott, with the support of the Champaign County Museum Network. On March 14th, President Trump issued the executive order continuing the reduction of the federal bureaucracy to eliminate seven additional federal agencies, including the Institute of Museum and Library Services. The IMLS operating budget makes up 0.0046% of the federal budget. This move drastically impacts our local, state, and national arts and humanities programs. We need to band together to save our museums and libraries. The Institute of Museum and Library Services aims to advance, support, and empower America's museums, libraries, and related organizations through grant-making, research, and policy development. IMLS provides grants to all 50 states and U.S. territories. These grants fund literacy programs, homework, and research resources, access to the internet, computers, and electronic databases, and training for workforce development. They also fund the preservation of museum collections and historic properties, museum assessment and professional development opportunities, including the Laura Bush 21st Century Librarian Program for current and future librarians and archivists. These are just a few examples of IMLS's national impact. According to the American Alliance of Museums 2017 Museums as Economic Engines report, museums contributed $50 billion to the U.S. economy in 2016. Illinois museums contributed $2.7 billion to the state's economy and provided 38,524 jobs. What's more, in their 2017 Museums and Public Opinion study, 90% of Americans from both rural and metropolitan areas and across the political spectrum wanted their tax dollars to support museums. IMLS has had a tremendous impact on our local museums and libraries. In 2008, the Museum of Grand Prairie and Mahomet received $116,500 through the IMLS Museums for America program. The Museum of Grand Prairie partnered with the Champaign County Board to develop the exhibition Abraham Lincoln, A Large Presence in a Small Town, exhibited at the Champaign County Courthouse in Urbana. Abraham Lincoln detailed Lincoln's 20-year career on Illinois' 8th Judicial Circuit. The Geertz Gallery at Parkland College received the Conservation Assessment for Collections Programs grant from IMLS. The funds made it possible for the gallery to both assess and improve the care of its permanent collection. Sarah Bennett, Archives Librarian at the Champaign County Historical Archives at the Urbana Free Library, shared her experience. I have personally benefited from participating in an IMLS grant-funded program. I was part of a cohort of archivists who practiced digital preservation at small institutions. That wraps it up, and I'm going to have to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette. Please stay tuned.